The KM Football Podcast. All the latest reaction and analysis from the KM Sports team. Listen every week and click subscribe on iTunes.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Fordham, and joining me this week is Steve Turbutt and Craig Tucker. How are you both this week?
Very well, Josh, thank you.
Yeah, good, mate, thank you.
Brilliant. So, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Audio Boom and iTunes, and get in touch with us via our social media channels if you've got any feedback or anything you'd like to hear on the podcast. So this week, guys, I think we should talk about Gillingham's win first, a brilliant 4-0 win at home to Bradford. All four goals coming in the second half, Regan Charles-Cook, Elliot List and Tom Eaves scoring twice. It's 0-0 at half time there. Yeah, Steve Lovell very pleased with that second half performance against the bottom of the table side. I think exactly what Steve Lovell would have wanted there, do you think, guys?
100%. It's been a bit of a tough time for Steve Lovell lately. Quite a bit of stick flying around. Bit of an uncertain future. He's spoken about it himself. I quite like that about Steve Lovell, that he's not ducked the question. He's sort of faced it head on. Made a big decision in the week by sending some players home from training, you know, that he wasn't happy with, and that's a brave move as well for an under pressure manager. He'd take a gamble there that could backfire quite easily, but you know, he made that call, had the backing of the chairman to do so, and clearly paid off. That's, you know, an excellent win there against Bradford. All the goals in the second half, but I think they rode their luck in the first half by all accounts, but 4-0 at home, perfect result, perfect response, and you know, really, really good day for Lovell.
Yeah, absolutely. And we said a number of times on the podcast how much of a better side they are with Regan Charles-Cook in the team. It looks like he made quite a big impact in that game. And yeah, it's a very good win for them. Perhaps I don't think you should get too carried away with it. Bradford, bottom of the table, they've really struggled this season. Bradford are only bottom because Gillingham lost to Plymouth during the week, who climbed up the table a little bit. So good signs, though, I would say. Things going in the right direction. Steve, it's a much-needed win for Gills, but perhaps we shouldn't get too carried away with things against the bottom of the table side. Gills still are in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, particularly given the real Jekyll and Hyde nature of their form recently, you just don't really know what you're going to get from Gills from one week to the other, and that's probably one of Steve Lovell's biggest problems, is that you send the team out of Fratton Park and they go and get a fantastic win against Portsmouth, and then you're up against Plymouth down at the bottom of the table, club in turmoil really, with the fans down there turning on the manager, and Jules go and get turned over, and Steve Lovell was very unhappy with the performance, as was the chairman, and then they go and score four goals in 45 minutes against Bradford. So they're so unpredictable at the moment, and yeah, great win, but unless they can put two or three together in a row, they're not going to climb away from that bottom four, so they do need to put a run together.
Yeah, Steve Lovell must be tearing his hair out at times. They can be brilliant from one game and then absolutely atrocious to the next one, so I think he'll be wanting a bit more consistency from his team. But good signs, and let's listen to some reaction from Steve after that win on Saturday.
Obviously we changed a few things up. A couple of boys coming back from injury, which makes a difference to us, which I've always said would. And that's no disrespect to the boys who have gone in there before, but first half, I thought the three of them took their time to get into the game, finding their feet, basically, with DJ as well. Darren Oldacre, who grew into the game as it went on and had a fantastic game. I had this sort of worry how they would approach the game, but I had to take a chance on playing them because I needed them in the team. And at second half-time, I said, we've got to press from the front. We've got to go out two front men, got to press their centre-halves, not give them too much the time that they had. Regan's got to go press their midfield play. The three have got to push into full-backs. So I said, we're going to play in their face. Just go in their face this second half. And that's what we did. And we won the ball off them. And then when we won the ball off them, then we were at them. When we had a good spell last year, and then when we start the season this year, that's what we did. We press from the front. We really have a go at. And I think we haven't done because of the personnel that we've had in the side. But now it's the way I want to play. I want to press from the front. It's exciting, and I think we've got people who can win the ball further up the pitch and create things, and it proved that today. We created so many chances in the second half, and that's the reason why. You know, like I said to him at half time, you know, the ball was going out wide in the first half, and then people were coming and they said, well, what if it goes back in there? I said, well, you go and chase it again. Well, what if it goes out? You go and chase it. It's hard work. It's hard work. Football is hard work. If you work hard at it and you put people under pressure, they can't play. If you allow anybody to play, they can play football if you give them time.
Now, their next game coming up is at home to Fleetwood on Saturday, Joey Barton's Fleetwood.
As we now have to call them.
As we now have to call them, yeah. It's sort of, you have to go with that now. Yeah, it's a bit of an interesting one. They've had a bit of mixed starts of the season. In fact, I think Joey Barton's finding management a bit tougher than he thought it would be.
Yeah, I don't know. They won the derby, didn't they, on Saturday, beat Blackpool. He's an interesting character, and I'm sure it's entertaining there, certainly for the journalists up there. They probably don't go short of copy up there from him. He's always got something to say. I don't know what he's been like on the touchline so far, whether he's sort of been up to anything on the touchline, any sort of fun and games, but I'm sure Steve Lovell will be able to handle that if there is anything going on. But it's good for League One to have somebody like that down there, really. Publicity for the league, publicity for Fleetwood. Not doing too badly, are they? A few points outside the playoffs, but I suppose he's probably promising start up and down, but 6 wins, you know, 4 points off the playoffs, you know, reasonable start for him, really.
And you look at Fleetwood in general, you know, the kind of project that they've done over the last 10 or 15 years, coming all the way up through non-league into the conference, obviously when Jamie Vardy and co were there, and then they've up through League Two and into League One actually consolidated, and we've seen other teams kind of zoom all the way up there and then start to drop back off again, but they you know, they're a small club at that level still, but they do seem to be a genuine sort of force in League One, whether they can make the playoffs or not. It will probably be the biggest test for Joey Barton this season, but they're no mugs, are they?
No, absolutely not. And I wonder if that the documentary about them was going to be made. I know they were pitching to try and have Joey Barton's first season made into one of those all or nothing Man City behind the scenes documentary, but I'm not sure anyone actually wanted to do it in the end.
It'd be interesting, wouldn't it? There've been some good ones over the years. Over the Peter Reid Sunderland one, that was a favourite from sort of mid 90s. The Barry Fry one at Peterborough, that was very entertaining as well. There's been some really good ones over the years. I'm sure that would go down quite well as well if that were made.
Yeah, it's important to have that central character in it. I'm sure Joey Barton would fill that role perfectly. Let's move on now to the National League and Ebbsfleet picking up a draw at Salford. Not many teams, I think, this season will go to Salford and come away with points. Steve, a good point in the end.
A great point in the circumstances. Salford, it's the first time I've seen them, and they've got some real thoroughbred players in their side, move the ball around really quickly. So much league experience in there, and Graham Alexander, who was managing in League One until recently, all the money that's been put in to develop the ground and the expertise of the class of 92 boys, Gary Neville and co. And it was always going to be a test for Ebbsfleet or for any side, and obviously Fleet going up with their sort of off-field issues around them at the moment. But it was it was the best performance of the season by distance for Ebbsfleet. Solid at the back. Nathan Ashmore looked back to his best in goal, made some really good saves. Every player was an 8 or a 9 out of 10. They deserve the draw. They could even have nicked the win on another day, so they'll be very, very pleased with that result and the performance.
Yeah, much needed for the fans as well, with everything that's going on off the field. It's good that everyone can just focus on sort of what's happening on the pitch, and yeah, a good point after some poor results in recent weeks. They took the lead as well for what we've been saying. They need to do that and not concede in the first sort of 20 minutes of the game, but they only had that lead for 3 minutes. A frustrating aspect of it, I imagine, that you get in front and not able to consolidate and then keep that lead like they perhaps could have done.
Yeah, brilliant goal from Corey Whiteley, it should be said. Long kick forward from Nathan Ashmore, and it actually came off a Fleetwood head back towards his own goal. Whiteley managed to get his right foot onto the ball and then absolutely smashed it into the top corner with his left foot. As good a goal as you'll see in the league this season. But yeah, 3 minutes later, really wicked ball in from the left. From Lloyd, and Gaffney forced a really good save from Ashmore, managed to keep the ball out from about 1 or 2 yards, and unfortunately Gaffney was able to knock the rebound into the roof of the net. And at that point you think, you know, with the home crowd behind them and a bit of momentum, obviously they've been top of the league, Salford, that they're going to come out flying in the second half. But Fleet did really, really well to just control the game for a while, about 20, 25 minutes, when they were able to kind of stop moves at source, get the ball out wide, get it moving, keep possession, take the sting out of the game and quieten the home crowd. And you mentioned the supporters element of it for Ebbsfleet. They had probably 100, 150 fans up there for a really horrible journey. Mm-hmm. Having made it ourselves, it took about 8 hours to get up there on Friday. And they were really vocal and a real good show of togetherness. You know, the fans were backing the players were fighting for each other and for the manager. And everyone who made the journey would have been really pleased with the result.
Yeah, and another ground to tick off as well. What are your thoughts on the facilities there at Salford?
Well, very different to what we saw in the BBC documentary a couple of years ago, when it was just kind of your bog standard lower league ground with a railing and a little old stand and a club shop and a tea hut, and whole new grounds basically popped up. Good, generated a good atmosphere. There's about 2,500 in there, and there's still work going on behind the main stand that we were in to build new changing facilities and the players' tunnel and all that. So it's not finished yet, a work in progress, but interesting to see what they're doing there, and backed by good, they've managed to grow the crowds quite well, so the local community are getting behind them and what they're doing, and I think they'll be pretty difficult to stop this year.
Yeah, you can really see the investment that's going on there, and we all sort of know who the backers there at the club. It's a club really in the ascendancy there.
We talk about Fleetwood having done something a little bit similar, with somebody putting money into the club and developing the ground, bringing players in and going up through the leagues, and Salford will certainly think they can get into League 2, League 1, and I wonder how far they can go.
No, absolutely. And Darren McMahon said after the game he was really proud of the professionalism that the players showed, particularly with the off-field issues. It's right that the players will get paid late again this month. In the face of that, he was pleased with how they dealt with that, and they were able to go out on the field and just play and just put that out of their minds for the game.
Yeah, so they're still waiting on their wages for this month. They're due to be paid on Friday, which would be 8 days late, but everybody travelled. There was nobody that pulled out of the squad. Obviously, a couple of people were left out, but that's normal with your five on the bench, and Michael Cheek and Jack King didn't make the squad on Saturday. But as I say, a good show of togetherness, the players kind of putting their bodies on the line, throwing themselves into challenges and standing up against the best side in non-league football. That's all you can ask for, really, as a manager. And Darren McMahon, rightly, you know, proud of the effort that they put in, what they've given for him, but also for the fans who travelled as well. That was his big point, that whatever's going on off the field, whether we've been paid or not and when the money's coming, those fans have paid their cash to come up to the Northwest and watch us, and we're going to give everything that we've got for them. And it's all about, his message was very much, you know, we're fighting for each other, for the club, for the fans, and nothing changes in that regard.
Absolutely, yeah. So credit to the players there with this situation, and they don't know who's going to go, who's going to leave, whether or not some players will have to go out, and to carry on like they have done is commendable, absolutely there. And let's catch up with some reaction from the boss Darren McMahon after that draw with Salford.
I thought they were terrific today from the start right until the end. Created a number of chances, thought we were a threat all afternoon, defended really well against an excellent Salford team. We got to start our season now, really. I think it's a fantastic performance away from home against a good side, and we've got two home games now in the league, and we need to go and put some performance in again at home and get some points. I don't think we were ever under the cosh, to be honest, like that. I don't think they ever really, really got up ahead of steam against us, to be honest. I thought, again, we defended really well, countered really well. I thought the first half hour, the second half, we totally dominated the ball. Went into the front, back out to midfield, we got it wide, got crossed into their box. We had control, people were playing well. You got to make subs at the right time. I thought the players on the pitch were doing well. Good performance all around from everyone who played. Our fans are terrific. They follow us home and away really, really well, particularly away. We've had great support all over the country so far this season and last season. Long may continue.
Now, the game coming up on Tuesday for Ebbsfleet is a big Kent derby at home to Maidstone. That's going to be a cracking game. We've got both Craig and Steve who will be at that game on Tuesday. Must be looking forward to it.
Yeah, be a good game. always good memories for Maidstone fans going back to Stonebridge Road, of course, after the playoff final from a couple of years back, everyone still talks about it when it comes up, that fixture. Be interesting game, really. Ebbsfleet did the double last year in their first year back up. I think both goals in the second half last year, they came on really strongly, didn't they, in the second half. And Ebbsfleet deserved to win that night, no doubt about it. And similar, I think, at the Gallagher as well. I think they were certainly worthy of the points as well, weren't they, from memory. But I think they've got this home record, Ebbsfleet, haven't they, that Maidstone are obviously aware of, conceding the first goal in all their home games, only won once at home, so it's obviously something they need to look at, see if they can exploit. Mason's form's not great either at the minute. Obviously the FA Cup win against Orient, which got everybody going, got the place on a high, but the league form hasn't really picked up under the change of manager. Obviously been a lot of changes in personnel, so it's going to take time to get it how Harry Wheeler wants it. He's taken 7 points from his 7 games, which is the same return that Jay Saunders had at the start of the season. Steve Watt came in, lost his 3 as caretaker, all 1-0. And then, Harry's had 7 games, 7 points from those games. So it will take time, but he's expecting he was saying at the weekend, end-to-end game, good footballing game. So that sounds promising, bodes well. Hopefully they'll go there and have a go. Mainly it's been about sort of based on being harder to beat and being good at the back, but sounds like he might be sort of willing to go there and have a bit of a go, try and get that first goal and see if he can exploit Ebbsfleet's problems at home.
I think the first 10-15 minutes are going to be so important. Maidstone obviously conceding a couple of very early goals against Solihull on Saturday. Harry Wheeler quite unhappy with their defending, but as Craig said, Ebbsfleet have conceded the first goal in all 8 league games at home. So they will feel, well, we need to keep them out, and then if we can score first, suddenly that draws Maidstone out and we can look to try and strike on the counter-attack and we can play our football and dominate. But there's a little bit of fragility on both sides. Ebbsfleet obviously did really well at Salford on Saturday and won in the FA Cup against Worthing the week before that. But in terms of the bigger picture of their league form, it hasn't been good over the last month, 6 weeks. I think if they get the first goal, we could see that end-to-end game where Maidstone have got to come out and attack them. If Stones go ahead, suddenly that nervousness might creep back into Ebbsfleet's play and the home crowd think, well, here we go again. So the team that makes the best start, I think, is probably going to go on and get the result.
Yeah, and a very important fixture in terms of league position as well. Both teams at the wrong end of the table where they wouldn't have expected to be at this point of the season. A win over a local Kent rival and to get 3 points and potentially sort of move further up the table is going to be one that I think the fans will just add a little bit of extra to the game as well. I mean, with everything that's been happening at Ebbsfleet, a win over Maidstone will probably do wonders for confidence and for the fans, just general mood around the club, I reckon.
Yeah, certainly when you talk about that togetherness that Darren McMahon's trying to get everybody to buy into at this time, it certainly has brought the players closer together because they're clearly all in the same boat, being paid late or not having been paid, and worth stressing that they've always been paid. It's been 2 or 3 days late here and there and 8 days late, we think, this time. So they've never played for free. A win in the derby can really sort of turn your season for either club. Ebbsfleet, we're 5 points ahead of Maidstone at the moment, so that would be 8 if they can win. And Maidstone close it to 2 points if they can get the win. So I think you look at Ebbsfleet's games coming up, following on from Salford, Maidstone at home, then they've got Barrow at home. They're also at home in the FA Cup. And then I think Boreham Wood at home later in the month. So if they can turn this home form around and get 2 or 3 wins in that time, then suddenly they're climbing up the table and they're into the top half. If it continues, suddenly they're looking over their shoulder and thinking, well, hang on, Maidstone or a couple of the others might be catching us. So it's a real pivotal couple of weeks.
There's a Jack Powell side to it as well tomorrow. He's gone on Kent Online today that he can't play in that game. Having just joined Maidstone from Ebbsfleet, that was part of the deal that that took him to Maidstone, and probably quite wise, Steve. Really good move on Ebbsfleet's part to stop that happening.
Yeah, I think it's something you'd often see with a loan move. If you loan a player out, then they're not eligible to play against their parent club. I mean, he is now a Maidstone player, but Ebbsfleet would have said, well, if you want him, then you can have him, but these are our conditions and he can't play in this game. So frustrating for him on the night. He'd be absolutely itching to be out there, particularly if Maidstone get a free kick anywhere near the penalty area. But he's going to go on and play most of the games this season for Maidstone, and including the return game at the Gallagher later in the season, where he scored twice for Ebbsfleet last season. So he's going to be a big player for Maidstone. It'll be interesting to get his thoughts if we can speak to him on Tuesday night.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It's going to be a cracking game tomorrow night at the Ebbsfleet. So let's talk about that Maidstone game on Saturday. 3 goals in the first 9 minutes of the match. Craig, sum up, what was that first 10 minutes of the match like?
Well, it was dreadful, the defending. The first two Solihull goals, the first one came from Maidstone's corner, and you obviously don't expect to concede seconds after winning the corner, but they broke well. No one went with the bloke, and it was a good finish from their point of view. Good move, swift counter attack and goal, and then the second one was poor as well. They had a chance to get rid of it on the edge of the box, tried to be a bit too clever, lost the ball. The chap got to the byline, he had sort of 3 players with him. It was almost sort of seemed slow motion players with him. He got the cross in. Should have been put away at the back post, wasn't, and then Youssef followed up and put it in. But Blair Turgot got one straight back within a minute of going 2 down, and you're sort of thinking then that sort of mad starts out the system, and they'll sort of crack on and get on with it. And Turgot did hit the bar around probably about half hour into it, did well from a Paxman pass, but smacked it against the bar. And the second half really was poor. I didn't think Maidstone looked in it, but credit Solihull, really. The goal and the third goal was bad as well, but the as bad as the goals were, I thought Solihull looked a really good side. Only just stayed up last year, but they're right up there this year, 2 points off the top, and they look everything a National League side should be, really big and strong and solid, hard to play against, but with quality up front where it matters, lively forwards who are good, know where the goal is. And I was really impressed with Tim Flowers as well. He seems to know exactly what he's doing, the old Leicester Blackburn goalkeeper. He had a beer in the bar after the game as well, so it was good, mixing in there with supporters after the game. I must admit, I did pop on Sky a bit afterwards and got them at 12-1 as outsiders to win the league. I really liked them.
Yeah, they've been one of the surprise packages of the season. Last year, they, like you said, they only just about stayed up. They had a good run towards the end of the season, and they've carried that on this year. Their turnaround's been absolutely brilliant, really. Blair Turgot scored again. Maidstone just can't keep relying on Blair Turgot to bail them out at the moment. It seems that way, that he's the only one who's able to find the net. They need someone else to be able to score. Is that the sort of the feeling at the moment?
Yeah, it's a funny one. He's the only player that scored a league goal for Harry Wheeler so far. He's up to 11, one in the FA Cup and one in the Ken Cup. So he's 9 league goals. Never too sure on that one, really, because it's one of those where you sort of see things in the past during Gerrard's days at Liverpool, where they sort of say, where would Liverpool be without Gerrard, take his goals away? But the fact is, he was their player, they're entitled to play him. He's scoring loads of goals, doing really well. As long as he's scoring, at least someone is.
No, absolutely, yeah, it's he's been brilliant this season for Maidstone, and Harry Wheeler didn't sound like he was too happy after the game, with particularly with the goals that they conceded. Would be wanting a reaction from the players, I imagine.
Yeah, particularly as he called them, as he said after, he made that quite clear after the game. Every avenue that the goals, he took, all of those things have been pointed out before the game, that they're up on the dressing room wall, do this, do that in these situations, and unfortunately it didn't go in, and all of those goals were bad goals, all avoidable, and he'll be making that point very strongly that that can't happen again.
No, absolutely, and let's listen to some reaction from Harry Wheeler after that defeat to Solihull at the weekend.
Of the poorest goals I've seen at this level. You give 2 up in the first 5 minutes, you're never going to optimally give people a head start, and that's exactly what we did. It's written in big letters in there, keeping down the line. First thing they do is let them come inside. And we can only sort of give them all the outlet and that. And it's a really poor goal. And then the second one's not much better. These games are tight in this league, and maybe Blair's goal, if we defend and do the right things in the first place, that's the 1-0 and we go and win. Their late goal might be an equaliser, but then the late goal's no better. The late goal's poor. We always said at half-time, is stay in the game. You know, and then when that last sort of 10 minutes happens, teams get edgy. If they're 2-1 up, they'd have got edgy and stayed in the game. But, you know, we gift a third, as we gifted the first two. And I'm not one of them who just, you know, sometimes you give credit to the other team and they do the good things in the right areas. They're a good manager and they do the right things. And fair play to them. But I don't think they'd even say we've gifted half of them goals to them.
Now, we mentioned the clash with Ebbsfleet on Tuesday, and then they follow that up with a game at Barnet on Saturday. Martin Allen's Barnet, they've picked things up a little bit this season. Martin Allen's Chesterfield, isn't he?
Yeah, John Steele.
Was at Barnet before, that's my mistake, guys. But they've picked things up a little bit mid-table there. Going to be a tough game. A Barnet on Saturday.
Yeah, they have picked up their mid-table. So John Steele, you know, massively experienced manager, mates, you know, old mates, the manager who led mates into the conference title back in '89. Still, you know, very popular with Stones fans. You know, when Barnet took him back in the summer, it was a safe pair of hands after relegation, and you'd expect them to be up and around the playoffs, I would guess. Steve's been there this year, the Hive, I think, absolutely played really well that day, didn't they? And
yeah, it was a good, I mean, you look at Barnet, one thing, they don't score many goals, but they don't concede many either. Played 16, scored 17 and conceded 17, so yeah, a lot of their games have been tight. They looked poor when Ebbsfleet went there back in August, I think it was, but they've clearly picked up since then, and you would expect with someone like John Steele, who knows the league as well as he does and has had success with different clubs in the past, that it was only a matter of time before they did get into a bit of a stride. So I suspect they're a different proposition now to the early weeks.
No, definitely. And yeah, that game on Saturday, following the game with Ebbsfleet on Tuesday, and Dover, they dropped to the bottom of the National League after their 2-1 defeat at Braintree. Poor defeat in the end for Dover. That was a real vital game, playing the side who were bottom of the league at the time, to lose 2-1. They would be very disappointed with that. I'm sure Andy Hesentyler was wanting to start picking up the form, picking up points, particularly with the run of games that they're currently in at the moment, playing lots of teams in and around them. It means that they are 6 points off safety and have the worst goal difference in the National League as well. Things don't really seem to be getting much better for Dover at the moment, guys.
No, they'd had a couple of games where they were unbeaten, I think, in League and Cup, and obviously that was a big one, the two bottom sides in the table. So much time to go, it's not going to decide anything. It's not going to be a result that sends them down or means they can't get out of trouble, but just a bit of a knock for confidence. What Hess is trying to do there, building a new side. I mean, the number of goals they've conceded, he's referenced that, is the real kind of concern. They've got to stop conceding so many goals, but I'm sure as they are now training full-time, they're going to get fitter, more organised, know each other's game a bit better, and the new players that have been coming into the club as well, that, you know, it's obviously going to take time for them to bed in and become a real unit and play the way that Hess wants to play, which is very different to how they played under Chris Kinnear. So yeah, very disappointing result, and obviously Dagenham, one of the sides around them, getting a win at the weekend as well, it just leaves you slightly more adrift. But look, we could be stood here in a week or two's time and they're out of the bottom four or right back in amongst the pack, so sure, he won't be too concerned, but disappointed to go there and lose.
No, definitely. And yeah, like you said, he's brought in a number of new players. They're training full time. Things can perhaps take a little bit of time to bed in. New system to learn. Players getting used to his management style. He's only been there for what, I think, 3 weeks now, and he still hasn't managed a game at home yet. So still, yeah, like a long way to go in the season. They're playing Dagenham at home on Tuesday. That's going to be a very big game, and then they've got Maidenhead on Saturday, who are also right down the bottom there as well. So it's
what a first home game.
Yeah, Taylor. Battle of the two former Gillingham managers as well, with Peter Taylor. Sure, they'll have a bit to catch up with on the touchline.
Yeah, good friends as well, aren't they? Still really close, and it should be a good game. That's it. Dagenham picked up, and they got that really good result against Harrogate, and very interesting to see how that one goes.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be all sort of chummy and smiles and having a nice chat before the game, and then as soon as that whistle goes, they'll completely turn on each other for 90 minutes. But two sort of proper good managers there, good pros, and yeah, that I'm sure that game won't be for the faint-hearted, both needing the points.
No, absolutely. Yeah, Dagenham picking up a little bit after their takeover, and they've improved in recent weeks as well. And hopefully Dover can start to pick up some points once those new signings start to get bedded in with the system and the club there.
And a game that has a bearing on, you know, Maidstone and the clubs just above as well. I'm sure Staines fans will be keeping an eye on how Dover Dagenham's going, because it gets to that stage where you think, you know, Dagenham could leapfrog Maidstone with a win potentially, or Maidstone could move well clear of the bottom four if they get a result at Ebbsfleet. So so much to look at. And then you've got Chesterfield in the midst of it as well, and they're still desperately struggling down there. So it can all change, you know, Tuesday, Saturday, next week. Picture can look very different. So it's a good time of the season.
Yeah, particularly with the schedule in the National League, you have lots of games that come thick and fast. There's a full programme of fixtures tomorrow evening, and then again at the weekend. So things can change very rapidly in the league. Let's talk a little bit about Dartford, how they got on at the weekend. A 3-1 defeat at Truro. They're playing their games at Plymouth, but Truro had had a pretty poor start to the season. That was just their second win. Steve, I imagine they'll be very disappointed to not come away with something from that game.
Yeah, definitely. Truro have been struggling. I'd say only one win before that, and Dartford, you just felt that they'd got into a little bit of a run, put a few results together. That the bad defeat at Oxford City in the FA Cup aside, they'd looked like they'd become harder to beat, and you know, within no time, seemingly they were 3-0 down at Truro on Saturday. So yeah, that long journey home would probably have felt even longer for them, and they'd got into the playoff places the previous week when most teams were playing in the cup, and then losing on Saturday they've dropped back down to 10th. So you know, they're only outside the playoff places on goal difference, so it's, you could throw a blanket over about 10 clubs in there. But I think that will have annoyed the managers, just to have taken a little bit of a step backwards after putting a bit of a run together. And just to mention for Darren Ibrahim as well, came out last week that he'd be leaving the club. I mean, he's been involved with Dartford since he was 8 years old, been involved with their youth sides and their first team, and been out on loan, then he's come back and sat on the bench and eventually made himself the number one, and then he's decided to stop playing to take up a coaching role at Charlton, which is a great opportunity for him to go full time and work with young professional keepers at the Valley. But he'll be a big miss at Dartford, not just for what he's done for them on the pitch, saved them so many points over the years, but a real, you know, great character, someone who genuinely loves the club. And that would have been a very hard decision for him to walk away, but I think everyone there wishes him the best, and just leaves Dartford with a new goalkeeper to find.
Yeah, I think you can tell by the sort of the reaction on social media and the amount of nice messages that people were giving him, just how much he's sort of well liked in around to the club, and also around the league as well. So yeah, wish him all the best in that role at Charlton. A difficult decision, I imagine, to give up playing football to go into a full-time coaching role, but one, yeah, it's a great opportunity for him to do. And
yeah, he had something similar opportunity about 4 years ago. QPR approached him, or he'd approached them, and there was a opportunity to go into an avenue of coaching with them, and that would have meant leaving Dartford as well. I think at that point he felt that he still had a lot to give. There was still more that he could achieve with Dartford. He hadn't been the number one for very long, if at all, there. So he wanted to really establish himself and play games and test himself week in, week out. He's done that now. He's played 180 games, I think, for the club. Also played internationally for Gibraltar, against, you know, the likes of Lukaku and Fellaini for Belgium in a qualifying match. So he's had a great, you know, career, not a long career. I think he's only 27 now. So he could have kept playing at National League South level for another 5, 6, 10 years, but how often are these chances going to come along to go and work at a League One club? And I think he's overseeing 22 different goalkeepers now, from under 8s all the way up to the under 21s and 23s. So he'll be he's been a good player for Dartford, but also a great person around the club and a coach working in their academy. So he'll go and make a success of this new job, I'm sure.
No, absolutely. Yeah, we wish him all the best of luck in that role. And one final thing before we finish this week is to go through the Kent Online Team of the Week. Now, in goal, we have Nathan Ashmore from Esfleet. Decent performance up at Salford then from Nathan Ashmore.
Yeah, and the reaction of the Salford fans as they were hurling abuse and singing "You've Got a Pineapple on Your Head," that told you everything you need to know about how well he'd played. You know, using every trick in the book to waste a few seconds here and there, but ultimately, you know, making some really, really good saves and standing up under pressure. So that's the player that we know that he can be. I don't think he's been quite at his best so far this season, but reached the standards that he would expect on Saturday. They'll need him to produce more of the same.
Yeah, and another player in the Ebbsfleet back line in the side, Sammy Magri. I think it just shows how good a defensive performance it was from Ebbsfleet then, two players in the Team of the Week.
Yeah, you really could have picked any one of the back four. Sam Magri looks more comfortable at right back, I would say, as opposed to one of a back three, and that's the system they've gone back to recently. Also became a dad last Monday, so he only trained once during the week, and then on the bus up to Salford for the game, and it was his best performance of the season, and he looked back to the play that we saw last season as well. So I just think right back suits him better, and Ebbsfleet as a team look more comfortable with the back four.
And in we have a centre-back partnership of Tom Parkinson from Tunbridge Angels and Richard Avery from Chatham Town. Chatham picked up another victory again on Saturday. They're flying in the Southern Counties East Premier Division. And then the back four completed by Alfie Paxman of Folkestone Invicta. And then Jack Payne of Ebbsfleet as well, the third Ebbsfleet player in there. Decent game then for Jack Payne as well.
Yeah, in my opinion, his best performance since he joined the club just over a year ago. They went up to Salford without Dean Rance, who rolled his ankle in training, and you'd say, well, he's going to be a really big miss in a game that you need to kind of win your battles in midfield and get your tackles in, and that's what Rance is all about. But it's to the credit of Jack Payne and, to be fair, Andy Drury alongside him, that they didn't miss Rance on the day, and they had, you know, more than enough steel in there to stop Salford getting forward and to stop the wingers coming inside and finding space. So I think Jack Payne will take a lot of confidence from that performance and gives Darryl McMahon a bit of a headache. If Rance is fit on Tuesday, who do you play against Maidstone?
Yeah, absolutely. And Darren Oldacre from Gillingham in there, making the most of a surprise start in that 4-0 win over Bradford. Winger Joe Turner from Tunbridge is also in there. And then we have a front three of Tom Eaves from Gillingham, who picked up another two goals. He just seems to be able to find goals in games like this. When Gillingham need it, it comes up with the goods. Sam Wilson from Deal Town and Johan Terhorst from Folkestone Invicta. Craig, you know quite a bit about Johan. Good to see him sort of do well at Folkestone.
Yeah, when he went back there towards the end of last season, he scored a bundle of goals there. I half expect someone to go back in for him in the summer and sort of take him back to a higher level, but I think he signed a contract at Folkestone and ended up staying there. He's not really scored too many this season, not as you'd expect, but good to see him get a couple on Saturday, and hopefully he'll kick on because he's got a lot of ability and a top lad as well, so it'd be good to see him push on.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Manager of the Week award went to Darryl McMahon there, a deserving award then Steve, particularly getting a point from Salford, as we've mentioned before. It's not many teams will go up there and get something from the game, and particularly with the off-field issues as well.
No, having 2 days earlier on the Thursday or the Wednesday, I think maybe it was, having to break the news to the players, look lads, your money's going to be late again this month, and a lot of teams, a lot of clubs, I think the players' reaction would be, well, you know, why are we bothering on Saturday? You know, I don't quite fancy it, Gaffer. I've got a little bit of a tight calf, or you know, I'm not sure I can make this one. But no, he's created a good culture there, and they're all, you know, all the players were available for selection, all went out, gave it their all, and showed what good players they are in one of the most difficult games of the season. So I think he has to take a lot of credit for, you know, keeping that togetherness there in a little bit of a difficult spell.
No, definitely. And yeah, that's all for this week. Thanks very much to everyone who's listened to the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Audioboom and iTunes, and follow Kent Online on Twitter for reaction during the game from the National League fixtures coming up this week on the Tuesday, a full programme of National League action. So we'll be at the Ebbsfleet and Maidstone game, and I'll be at the Dover against Dagenham game, and then we have fixtures as well on Saturday that we'll be at. So yeah, don't forget to follow our social media channels, and we'll be back next week.